Topic this morning is servanthood. What I'd like to do is briefly talk about it for just a moment on the subject of servanthood. And then I'd a workshop is where you work, right? I mean, you didn't come to be preached at. So what I'd like to have us do is to examine some biblical principles of servanthood, what it means. And then I know that this is a rough topic to get to, but then let's get practical about it and see how we can actually begin to institute some of the principles that we look at in our lives this morning. Why don't we open to the book of Romans? The book of Romans. Chapter 12. I have been doing a lot of thinking on the subject of servanthood over the past several years, and I really like to talk about it because I think it's a concept that's misunderstood in Christianity today. I think it's a missing ingredient among many people in Christendom who really have no concept of what being a servant really is. And let's start in verse 1 of chapter 12 in the book of Romans. And most of you have probably memorized the first two verses. How many of you can quote Romans 12, 1 and 2? Would you like to do it on the back row there?
Okay. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, just present your body a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the Holy Spirit and by the regeneration.
Can somebody else pick up there? Okay, excellent. But then, and we all hear tremendous things about giving your life to Jesus and going wherever He calls, and a number of things have been brought out by Romans 12, 1 and 2. And as I've been thinking about it, the first prerequisite for servanthood is just that. It's obedience to Christ. Obedience, first of all, by asking Christ into your life, and then secondly, in the day-to-day operations, as we're in class or wherever we happen to be. And decisions confront us as to which way we're going to go, one way or the other. And the question is, now, what does the Lord want me to do about it? And then verse 3 is very essential, however, I think, in the idea of servanthood. And I think it gives us an insight on how we begin to practice it in our lives. Verse 3 says, by the grace given to me, I bid every one among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith which God has assigned him. So many times we think of a servant as kind of a wimp, you know, the guy that's, you know, he's the person no one really likes. He speaks in sort of a high voice. And he's the Casper milk toast of everybody in Christian life. He's the epitome of the mamby-pamby Christian. And I don't think that's necessarily true in terms of what a real servant is, or the beginnings of a real servant, because none of us have really arrived. In verse 3, as I thought about it, I bid every one among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith which God has assigned him. So I think the first step in becoming a servant is a sane concept of who you are. It's important. Now, things that come in there are things like, well, what is my personality like? What are my strengths? My weaknesses? What I like to do?
and various other things. In other words, as we begin to analyze ourselves, have you ever sat down and really honestly with someone else begun to ask yourself what it is that makes you like you really are? What are some of your strengths and weaknesses? Not to get out on an ego trip, but to begin to realize what your strengths and weaknesses are, thus beginning to have a sane concept of yourself. So on that beginning, in terms of beginning to look at ourselves and who we really are, let's look at some biblical principles on this issue of servanthood and how to serve. And I think I've got enough. They told me to be 21 here. What I'd like to have us do for about the next 35 minutes is to explore some biblical principles of servanthood. Now, don't get all hung up with the number of pages. For practical sake this morning, let's just do the first two pages. First two pages with your Bible and put a little think time into it here for the next 15 or 20 minutes, and then we'll discuss it on some biblical concepts of servanthood and to look at some examples. Are there any extras? If there are, I would appreciate having one. Yes. Denies himself. Okay. The idea of sacrifice.
Repeat something he said. It takes the initiative to be convinced before they're asked to do something.
It takes initiative, all right.
One who recognizes the workings of different members of the body fulfills his own function.
Okay, recognizes what his part is and then takes part. I saw that name.
Someone who's more concerned with the success of another.
Okay, concerned about the success of another.
Knowing his master.
Someone who knows his master. Excellent. Anyone else have a glimpse of new life? Okay, we each have a thought or a concept of what a servant is. What importance did the fellows that you looked at, and there were various ones throughout there, what concept or importance did they put on being a servant that you happen to see? Very important. You know, I've always thought it was very interesting in Romans 1:1, where Paul, who is was used of God in an uncanny way, and we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for him, you know, lists his prerequisites. It says, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, set apart for the gospel of Christ, which God hath beforehand ordained through his holy prophets in the scriptures. But you know that Paul, in that grocery list of qualifications, listed being a servant as number one. Who were some of the others there that were referred to who had that concept? Yes?
Peter had it as number one, but he had it with an and alongside his apostleship. It was, you know, apostleship was any more important than being a servant in this group.
Okay. So he had function, and then how he viewed himself. How he functioned, okay?
Jesus saw his lifestyle as a servant.
Jesus saw his lifestyle. Didn't necessarily come to be the mighty king, did he? The first time around. Anything else? One pastor. Yeah.
I think Paul in 1 Corinthians, he was first a servant of Christ and then he was a minister.
Yeah.
And I think that made a difference when he was born.
Good point. We tend to think of ourselves ministers first, servants second. I do. I get into that trap. You know, here I am running around, running the kingdom of God. And then I happen to think, yes.
You are man's image of him to be servant.
Wanted man's image to be a servant, okay? He wanted to be perceived that way. Matter of fact, just a side issue, I almost feel a sermon coming on here, but in Matthew 25, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20, verse 25. On the subject of leadership. Jesus addresses the issue and in Matthew 20:25, but Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." If some of you are functioning in positions of leadership in a Bible study or in various types of leadership, it's interesting that Jesus takes the concept of leadership as the world looks at it and turns it 180 degrees and said, all right, now, if you're going to be a leader, you need to be a servant. And that passage has been challenging me for the last year, just in functioning in a leadership capacity, what it really means to be a servant as a leader. So just side comment. John 13. What observations did you make there? That's probably, you know, that's straight from the horse's mouth on the issue. And what did you observe about Jesus?
So you really
don't
have to look hard to find anything to do.
It wasn't a theological issue, just a practical issue.
Also,
yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I think the issue is around not what can I get and what can I give.
Not what I can get, but what I can give. Okay, yes.
Well, also, I think in that culture, washing somebody's feet is a very distasteful task. Not just what you hire people to do for guests that came into your home. It wasn't what the master of the house did at all.
Heavens, I mean, you know, leaders never do that sort of thing. Yeah. Okay. You know, I thought it was interesting how Jesus brought across the point in John 13:13-14. You call me teacher and Lord. You're right. So I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash another's feet. But and that's why, as I think about having a workshop on servanthood, I mean, it's almost asinine, to be honest, because you don't learn really to be a servant by sitting around doing little papers. You learn to do it, you know, in the everyday living of life. And it's just a maturation process. But we can look at some principles here on being a servant. Well, over in 2 Kings 5, 19 through 27 on the second page. Any observations there?
I have a question. Was he, about his mother, was he trying to serve Elisha? He thought that Elisha had done what he should have done, so he was able to do the things for Elisha, but he was trying to keep the things he got from himself.
Well, that's a good question. Does anyone have the answer?
Well, I think that he did it because he wanted to receive earthly recognition and reward.
Okay, he wanted to receive, that's one thought, wanted to receive earthly recognition or material gain for his services.
Verse 22, or in verse 25, he lied to Elisha about going out. So where have you been? Nope.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I went out to help you, he said, nope. So I think he probably was not trying to help Elijah, more himself.
Yeah, his motives were self-centered. Okay.
Like you said, even if it was an attempt to get something from him to help Elijah without Elijah's knowledge, it was still, it had the attitude of service must be paid for. It has to be a give and take, nothing is one way. He said, Elijah, I'm going to him, and he shall, as the Lord lives, I shall, you know, he shall pay what he's, you know, through it, and not quite that way.
Yeah. The old, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours syndrome. Okay. Any other thoughts, observations?
Just the whole principle, when you're sure that you think of just within the motives, man, fear and loss and desire for gain, you can go to those. You can lose out on that possible reward and make sure you gain something.
I mean, heavens, here I am. I'm doing all kinds of things for this person, and man, he's not paying me a very good salary, maybe no salary at all. And, you know, what am I going to get out of this thing? I can really identify with Gehazi. I worked as Warren Sani's assistant for 3 years. And you travel all around, you know, and you're kind of carrying bags and doing all sorts of things. And the Lord really used that passage in my own life. Now, don't try to grab any of the glory or try to grab anything for yourself. Facts are is that you're here to help this man. And, that's the only reason you're here. And so don't try to better yourself, make a name for yourself, or grab anything. You know, you're just here to serve. And so the Lord really used that particular passage of Scripture in my own life. Thought I'd just pass it along. On this issue of motives, I think it's important to realize that the Lord knows what our motives are for serving. I remember I used to go over when I became involved in the Navigator ministry at Kansas State many years ago. Not too many. But I used to ask myself, every now and then I'd ask myself, well, why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, we used to go over and do various things for the representative. And every now and then we'd stop and really check our motives as to why we were doing it. Because, I mean, the Lord sees them. And we'll eventually be tested, I think, more on our motives than our actions in a lot of cases. Well, what are some prerequisites of being a true servant? I like to keep things simple. And I've alluded to one already. It's this idea of having a proper self-concept. Now, why could Jesus serve in John 13? And I thought it was interesting in verse 3, it says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into His hands, and that He had come from God and was going to God, rose from the supper table and went over to wash the disciples' feet. But He knew exactly who He was, what His mission was, and what God had put Him on earth to do. He had a proper self-concept of who God was and who He was in relation to God. He really had that figured out. And how did He do that? You ask yourself. Well, numerous times in the book of Mark, I think one of the keys, and we all know Mark 1:35. Somebody could probably quote that. He arose a great while before day and went out to a lonely place, and there He prayed. But evidently, you know, even Jesus Christ, who was the Son of God, had a vital devotional life, whereas He spent a lot of time with the Father. As you go through the book of Mark, there are only actually about 27 sentences in the whole book of Mark. Jesus goes here, and then He goes here, and then He does this, and then He does that. And there are just a whole string of conjunctions, ands, buts, here, there, you know, throughout the whole book of Mark. But about every chapter, you'll see Him pulling off alone with the Lord to spend time in the context of a hectic schedule. And so, as you stop and think how Jesus developed that self-concept, evidently it was with protracted time with the Lord. As I have an opportunity to think about
some prerequisites of being a servant. I think one thing that I notice in people who really have that quality is the fact that they're observant of others' needs. Proverbs 22:9 says, "He who has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares his bread with others." But a bountiful eye, the idea of always looking and trying to perceive needs that people have, being observant, not just necessarily being oblivious to the world and people who are around us. And I think the third thing is a willingness to give myself wholeheartedly to a particular whatever I'm involved in. Jesus certainly did that. Philippians 2:8 says, "Being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death." Now, Jesus was evidently very wholehearted about his task that he came to do. And I ask myself, now, as I am involved in various things with people, am I willing to give myself wholeheartedly to that situation? I had a struggle with it this morning, to be absolutely honest. I came in from Albuquerque last night with a group of 14 businessmen that we were involved with for the last couple of days in Albuquerque. And I always schedule myself just chock-a-block, and I leave for Western Kansas tomorrow, out around Garden City and Dodge. And I thought, boy, very hard to give myself wholeheartedly to come to the workshop. But I struggled with that for a while and got it resolved. So some prerequisites in terms of being a servant. And it's very important in order to be a servant. You know, this topic, as I have an opportunity to get around and make observations just through my own life and through others' lives, if you ever want to be successful in being married, you best exhibit some of these qualities of being a servant. And those of you that are married know what I mean. I'm just beginning to learn that. I get married on April 29th, but I'm just beginning to learn after a number of years of being single what a lack of servant attitude I really have in terms of being willing to give up my time. And that's the biggest thing with me is my time. I'm very time conscious. I schedule right down to the last little nit and tittle and try to cram as much in as I can, but being very self-conscious as to the fact of developing and giving myself wholeheartedly. Secondly, if you're ever thinking about going to the mission field, the Navigators have a number of missionaries, and as I've had an opportunity to do some traveling in our mission work in Latin America and Europe and throughout the Orient, one of the biggest wipeouts of missionaries is the fact that they can't be a servant. You know, they want to come in and transform everybody else into our culture. We want to cram everybody into our way of doing things as a Christian, instead of turning around and looking at it from the other person's point of view and saying, well, now there are legitimate things in their culture that they need to, we need to adopt. So if you're ever going to the mission field, this quality of being a servant is very important. And if you're ever going to be effective as a Christian in terms of multiplying your life, you really need to begin to exhibit qualities of servanthood. Well, what are some qualities? We've talked about prerequisites. Now let's look at a quality or two. And I came up, there are numerous ones, but I came up with five as I'm involved with people, both in a leadership capacity and being led. And I think one of the biggest things that I appreciate in people I work with, or people who work for me, or whatever, is this fact of a cooperative spirit. And I confess many times that I'm always out trying to do my own thing, my plan, my thought, you know, my way of doing things is the best. When in reality, to be willing to have a cooperative spirit, it's one thing to put input into a, suppose you want to have a Bible study. And so two or three different people want to use different... one wants to use a Navigator series, another wants to use one maybe that's put out by Campus Crusade, or, you know, what's the best method? And it's one thing to put your input into what ought to go on. It's another thing to finally resolve it and have a cooperative spirit once a decision's made. So a cooperative spirit. I think another thing is faithfulness. Very important. You know, when I commit myself to do something, well, am I willing to carry through on it? And there's a tremendous commentary to this in the book of Joshua. Joshua wasn't an original thinker. Matter of fact, I don't think he had an original thought in his whole life, as I read about Joshua. But one thing he did, he was faithful. In Joshua 11:15, it says, "As the Lord had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua." And so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all the Lord had commanded Moses. He was faithful. You know, am I faithful? I dropped the ball the other night on it, little thing, and that it was rather embarrassing for a number of people. And so it's kind of like a little fellow came into the doctor's office, and his face was burned beyond belief. And the doctor said, "Well, what happened to you? What were you doing?" He wouldn't say, and he asked him again. He said, "Well, what were you doing? What happened?" He says, "Well, I wasn't doing much. I was just bobbing for French fries." But I get French fried every now and then on that one. Willing to take responsibility and be accountable. Now, you and I, in the Baptist Student Union and in the Navigators, have really received an awful lot when you stop to think about it, in terms of, in regards to most Christians throughout the world, the amount of training or the amount of exposure we've had. Matthew 25:29 has a interesting thought. It says, "For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from him who has not, even what he has will be taken away." You know, it is important that we have an abundance spiritually. I mean, you come to Glen Eyrie and sit through a week-long conference like this. You think of the people throughout the world who are Christians who don't have the opportunity to come to something like this, or don't have the opportunity to be involved in things we're involved in, Bible studies and opportunities to grow spiritually. And we've received a tremendous amount of input. And does it not behoove us to take responsibility and be accountable for what we receive, you know, to give out? It's very easy just to come to one of these things and soak it all in, go home, and just live a warm, fuzzy life. I know. You know, I've done that. But really be willing to put others ahead of myself. I think another thing in terms of quality of a person who has servant attitude is he thinks ahead on things. He's able to perceive situations, to look ahead and say, "Now, this, this, and this." In other words, we had a banquet in Albuquerque the other night. And to be able to think ahead, well, the audiovisual needs to be plugged in, it needs to be tested, we need to have various things for the speakers, you need to have cards here, cards there, various other things. But to think ahead for a situation, and then to take action. And I think the fifth thing, as I just observe others, is to be willing to let others serve us. Once again, back to John 13. This is a hard one for me to let people serve me. You know, it's always after something like this, I'll bet at the end of this workshop you'll be a scramble. We'll see who can let the other person through the door first. You know, it always happens. But there's a real ministry we can have in allowing people to serve us. And one of the biggest things I had to get over was when I came on staff with the Navigators, being supported financially by others. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to overcome in my life, the fact that others would support me financially and, you know, I wasn't responsible. Growing up on a little farm in Kansas, I mean, that means you're independent as a hog on ice. And you don't like to have others serve you. So, but in John 13, 8 through 9, Jesus getting ready to wash Peter's feet. Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." And Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part in me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." You know, Peter did not want to let the Lord serve him. But Jesus spoke to the issue of allowing others to serve us. So just some little thoughts this morning on some qualities. Why don't you turn over to the next page? And let's list at least five needs that you have on a daily basis, as you think. Five practical needs that you have wished at one time or another that someone would have been available to help you with. Now, keep it very practical. I don't mean, you know, just the obvious things that come to mind, but think of little things that come to mind that you wish that people could help you with from time to time. And don't turn the page. That's illegal. Think through your daily schedule. You know, in the morning, what are some things you'd like to have people help you with? Besides tests. The reason I put five down is you never think about yourselves. In BSU or in every year's word, when our voice is so high, you don't think about everybody else. But, you know, that's one thing about having a proper self-concept, being able to look at yourself. The other day I sat through a little seminar when we had to, we were in groups of four, and we had to tell three positive things about ourselves. to the other people in the group, and honestly, goodness, people get to know the three positive things to tell about themselves. So. Needs. What are some of the things you came up with?
Cook meals.
Cook meals. Marriage is on the docket. Any other needs? Huh? Clean, okay. A maid is on the docket.
Typing.
Soy. Let's see, I'm going to put the man out here. Okay. Decision making. That's a good one. Mechanical. The car. Etc. Okay? Yes. Appreciation. I'm sorry? Okay. Privacy. Get out of my life. Okay, a nap niche. You need a friend.
Transportation.
Okay, transportation. Anything else? You need to be exhorted. Let's see, how do you spell kicking the pants? No, I'm sorry. I need that. Yes. Run errands. Yeah, okay. I put that in. Yeah. A watchdog. Okay. Any other things? Practical day maintenance. Boy, I need you saw my schedule, friend. If you'd like more, you help me this afternoon. I appreciate it. Fellowship? All right. Okay, a sounding board. Okay, occasional meal. I'm sorry? Now, what do you mean by that? Okay, schedule. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, tutoring. Okay, a deep friendship, in other words, a mutual sharing. Okay, finances. Ironing. I was interested. What did you put in there? Yes. I'd like a little older perspective. I mean, not that you look old. Right, okay. Cleaning windows. Anything else?
Chancing the carpet.
Okay, well, we've got a number of things here in terms of needs that people have. Let's turn to the other page. Now, on the basis of what's been shared as to needs that others have, and on the basis of needs that you experience in your own life, list at least 5 ways you can personally serve someone in the next few days. It might be part of this group, a member of your family, someone at work, school, neighbor, friend, or whatever. And let's don't do 5. Let's just put down 2. As I tried to do 5 after I did this, it just killed me. So why don't you try 2? All come up to 2. Now, pick out 1 that you'll do in the next few days. See, as soon as you get back from this conference, the number one thing that you are going to do, and really do it wholeheartedly, in light of your needs, in light of others' needs that you know of, that you will help out someone. Just put a little star beside the one. Now, I hate to really get messy here, but why don't you share that with someone as to what you intend to do, you know, after this workshop or sometime here in the next over lunch or whatever, but before it slips your mind, you know, that you want to... what you want to do for another person, and then, you know, let that person know when you actually complete it. For me, that was a good little way to motivate me to do something. I used to live in a home in Chicago, and 2 of us fellows lived in a basement. It was kind of down in the pit. And that's the way we used to keep each other motivated. Now, I know that's artificial, and it's not spiritual, but it gets the job done from time to time.